Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Chris Taylor is here. Aki is here. How are you two doing?
Pretty good.
Hey, it's me.
It is you. But there's no Purnell. He'll be here later on. He's got board game night, so he'll show up when his party is over there. But in the meantime...
When he's sufficiently bored.
Ha! That's a pun.
Oh, God, it is. Ugh. It legitimately took me that long to even realize it was a pun. Fuck.
That sure is a unique situation we found ourselves in.
I fucking hate you so much.
I mean, you kind of asked for it when you completely missed the pun.
So still need a unique with, like, reverb and, like, delay.
We need George to do a unique with reverb and thunderous background clap. I don't know, something he could do something ridiculous. Because for now, like, I just have a wrestling clip.
Now that's respectful.
Oh wait, no, wrong one. Where the hell did it go? Did I get rid of it already? I may have. Damn, we had one that goes, that's unique.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, but anyway, I have this one for Aki.
Dumbass!
I think you mean for Jacob. Thank you very much, motherfucker.
Oh, you gotta be fucking kidding me!
And then we have Matt PA on the show, just because he's on our soundboard forever. How was everyone's weekend?
Pretty good.
Are we really at 810 uses of that word?
Probably. Give or take, because I've probably missed some. But I know BX Latino, he also occasionally adds them, even though no one says it.
It's fine. We have so many extras that we never account for.
Yeah.
Especially when we get, like, how many times did we say it before and, like, one counted?
Yeah. Exactly. One counted.
Yeah.
Because then y'all started talking about the word, and fuck y'all.
Yeah. Good times. So, Chris, what have you been up to? How was your weekend?
Weekend was good. I'm trying to remember. Sunday I recorded an album.
Ooh.
Yeah. The whole thing.
Which band?
Thunder People.
Nice.
Yeah. And so that, you know, we'll see when that comes out because, you know, we are bad at releasing stuff. and Saturday was... I can't even remember what games I mostly played on Saturday. It's funny. I've kind of been, like, I'm still in, like, big time Dragon Quest mode. I don't remember. I think I already told y'all about the special map that I unlocked in Dragon Quest 9, right?
Maybe.
Dragon Quest, I don't remember. 9 was the DS one, or the 3DS one, right? Or DS, whatever.
The DS one. DS one. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I knew there were two screens, I just couldn't remember if they were in 3D or not.
Yeah, I can kind of summarize this, I suppose, pretty... So Dragon Quest IX, if you remember correctly, the DS game had... That's okay, but it had multiplayer capabilities, right? So you can play with your friends and go through dungeons. Part of that is that you can unlock these special kind of random dungeons called grottos, and they're items like treasure. They're considered treasure maps, right? And if you open the treasure map, then the dungeon will now be on your map. You have to uncover it, but that's the way that they could have literally hundreds of thousands of these things in the same game without taking up too much space, is that you can only access one at a time, and they're in, like, you know, there's so many variables, and they can appear in, like, these different places and stuff. And of course you could tackle them with your friends, just like an MMO. Not bad for a 20, huh? Yeah.
If you leave one and find another one, can you go back to the prior one, or is it like you go in, you exit, now it's just fucking gone because there's thousands of them or whatever?
You'll never lose one.
Okay.
So what it is that it goes into your inventory as, and it's got like a certain status. It's like not yet found status. And then once you find it and go in, then now it's got a found status. And then once you beat the boss at the end of it, now it's got a beaten status. And every time you beat one, you acquire another treasure map.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, and depending on your main character's level, which includes, by the way, things called revocations, which is when you get to level 99 with your character, you can with a specific job, because there's 12 different jobs, you can hit level 99 in each job if you really want to. You don't have to. None of this is necessary in the game. This is all extra. But once you hit level 99, you can reset it back to 1, start over again with all your skills still there. So it's just a way of acquiring more skill points. And if you get revocations and your character's in a high level, you can get much, much higher quality drops of treasure chests, or sorry, treasure maps. Your next dungeon will be way better than your last dungeon. And, you know, this is the way that you get all of the best in-game, like, end-game items, secret bosses, all kinds of cool content. It's the reason why a typical playthrough of Dragon Quest IX for the main storyline is about 70 hours, and a 100% playthrough is about 700 hours. Is because of the random elements such as these grottos. Okay, so that's the grottos. There was a player in Japan who stumbled across this map. He randomly generated it from his playthrough, and it's the actual title using the dungeon naming convention, because it's always XX of X, level X, right? And those are different variables. So this is Ruby Path of Doom, level 87. So Ruby Path of Doom level 87 is a one of like the rarest combinations of variables that basically it's a high level dungeon, like, you know, it's kind of basic, but it's got 16 floors, and once you get to floor 15, the entire so like the enemies that appear in the dungeons are part of the variables, right? And this one, every single enemy group has a Metal King Slime in it. A Metal King Slime has the second most experience points in the entire game, but they're extremely hard to find. You likely will never see one when you beat the main game, right? Like,
aren't they like crazy hard to kill too?
Yeah,
they can be, but there's an easy way to do it. But yeah, by this point, you probably do have that easy way. So basically, you get on this floor, and it's just all of these super extremely high yield experience point enemies, and that it's all of them. Like, there's no variety, you know? It's just like, it's Lucky Charms, it's just the marshmallows, you know? It's a jackpot of a dungeon to get, right? So Masayuki, the player, shared his map around, and it got shared around so many times in Japan, like tens of thousands of times. It became a sensation. Like, he actually became a celebrity.
Wow.
Because he was the guy that found this map and randomly generated it and then shared it with all the people. So a Masayuki map is so well known among the Dragon Quest community, it is referenced in Dragon Quest XI. They actually included it. It's in the definitive edition, but still, it's in there. It's canonized in Dragon Quest, the Ruby really Path cool. of Doom. level 87, yes. And it's a very funny quest if you ever get that far in Dragon Quest XI. I won't spoil it, but it's one of my favorite quests in that whole game. Anyway, so in my game of Dragon Quest IX, I rolled it. I randomly got Ruby Path of Doom level 87 in my own game purely by chance.
Wow.
Yeah, so I have my own Masayuki map about 15 years after it was relevant, but I did go down there. I went to level 15, and sure enough, there's all the Metal King slimes I can eat.
Holy and, hell.
So that's kind of enhanced my game a little bit, because now I'm like, you know, getting up to the levels that I need to be to get all the remaining randoms that I need to get that are level based. And like, yeah, I can get all my characters to level 99 and just be done with combat and just go around looking for treasure. So that's what I'm working on right now with Dragon Quest IX, is having a drop so rare and wonderful that it literally made a person a celebrity in Japan, you know, so many years ago.
Damn.
But yeah, if you look up Masayuki map and then Dragon Quest, you'll be able to read about it and what it is. But yeah, it's so weird. I've looked at the details of the map before, and yeah, mine line up exactly. Like, it is the exact same variable. And it's not that it's impossible to get that, it's just that it is a very special combination, and it's as random as anything else. Like,
yeah,
but you know, having that level with those variables is not, you know, like, nobody on the internet knows how to manipulate that besides just hacking your emulated game, which of course you can do that, but nobody knows how to get it onto a regular cartridge, which is what I did.
So can you share this among all your friends now?
I can, yeah, in tag mode, but I can't do it over the internet because the internet doesn't exist anymore for this game.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. I can trade it. I have two copies of the game, so I can actually share it with my main game, and then yeah, I can share it with anybody that's nearby.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, you know, anybody with a copy of Dragon Quest IX that, you know, wants to hang out in Austin, Texas, I don't know. Like, or if I'm ever at a con or whatever, I'll totally bring it.
I wonder how many people would show up to, like, get that map off you.
I don't know. I don't know what the demand is for it. Yeah, because like the U.S. is so different about Dragon Quest than Japan, it's so hard to predict what people are going to care about when it comes to Dragon Quest. Like, you know, I have one friend I know in my whole group of friends that even knows what a Masayuki map is, and he was pretty impressed, but he didn't really care that much. He knew what it was. And I guess at the end of the day as well, there are technically better maps you could roll, but this one is just the famous one because of how much it was shared and at the time it was shared.
Damn.
So, yeah. So that's my weekend, I guess, is Dragon Quest, and then I recorded an album.
Aki, did you do anything remotely as cool?
No, I basically slept the entire weekend.
Very good.
That's really cool. I wish I could do that.
Yeah, I went to sleep at like 10 a.m. one day and woke up at 3 a.m. the next day.
Nice. I wish I could do that, but I actually am probably going to work overtime this weekend.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Seems like that's what everyone's doing lately, overtime, and seems like nobody could get ahead these days.
Yeah, although I did find out as of last year that I think as of last year, like, overtime is now, like, tax deductible. So I actually was able to incorporate that into my taxes this year a little bit. That's very boring, but it's exciting for me because my job is like a lot of overtime. So
very nice.
Anyway, now that I'm talking about taxes, we better change the subject.
Please, why, for did you do yours yet?
Yeah, I did mine yesterday.
Okay.
They're all done. It's all good.
Yeah, we got ours done like right at the beginning of February. Our refund is long gone on bills already.
Yeah, that's how mine's gonna be.
I'm kind of excited. I think this week I'm gonna fire up Gothic Classic. Did you know that game is presently available in a special way on PlayStation and Xbox. It has a normal release on Switch. It's been there for a while.
I have the Switch version.
It doesn't hit Xbox and PlayStation until July 28th.
Okay.
But if you pre-order Gothic 1 Remake, which comes out at the beginning of June, you get Gothic 1 Classic now free.
Oh.
Huh. Weird.
So I pre-ordered Gothic 1 Remake so that I could play Gothic 1 Classic now instead of in July.
Nice. I bought Gothic 1 and 2 from the publisher because, you know, they sell the physicals from the publisher's website.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, you have to import them from Germany. But yeah, I did that, and I started a game of Gothic 1, and I didn't get too far before I kind of moved on to something else. Not because I didn't like it. I actually thought it was very cool. But yeah, I that's all I have for Gothic.
Who sold the physical? Was it THQ?
I think it was THQ, yeah. Hang on.
I'm kind of surprised they didn't do any American releases of that.
Looks like VGP has a, well, it says anyway, let's see. Yeah, I did buy it from the THQ Nordic store. And at the time, it was the only release, but I think VGP might have one. I've ordered something from them before.
Oh my god, they have a full-size sword you could get on their website? Only 400 euro.
I mean, if it's a real sword that can, like, you know, that can defeat dragons,
I'm guessing,
and stuff,
it's not,
like, that's
sharpened,
a pretty good deal.
But just decorate.
Well, no, you have to you have to sharpen them.
That, and you have to do it with magic, clearly.
Yeah, they don't really sell pre-sharpened swords for pretty good reason.
Eh. What's it going to do? Slice through the packaging? Oh, yeah, it will.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that, but, you know, it can slice through you, and that's what they want to prevent.
Indeed.
But once you sharpen it, then you're kind of like, or, you know, that's like, well, it's in your hands now.
You're on your own, buddy.
Yeah, you're on your own at this point.
Oh, man. We got some games to talk about. Should we dive into these?
Sure.
Not too many this episode, so it should hopefully go by fairly quick. First game is Morbid Metal, developed by Screen Juice, published and provided to us by Ubisoft. Thank you, Ubisoft. Aki, say thank you.
Thank you.
Released April 8th on PC for $17.99. Shapeshift into powerful characters in real time. Chain impactful moves and tear through waves of deadly machines and brutal bosses in this fast-paced hack-and-slash roguelite. Aki, what is Morbid Metal?
Okay, so Morbid Metal starts you off as a robot person, I guess, and you start off right in the thick of shit. You're immediately told, okay, here's how you run, here's how you jump, oh, and here's a fight, kick the shit out of these bad guys, and then you're just kind of let loose in this world. It doesn't have a ton of story right now, maybe at all, I'm not sure, but you quickly slice and dice your way as this robot with a katana through all of these other robot enemies. Some of them are, you know, standard thin, like, kind of with praying mantis style arms trying to stab you. Some of them are a bit bigger and are like big ape dudes, and then some flying ones that like to shoot at you like little bastards they are. And you're just going around, zipping around, kill them all as quick as can be. You got some special abilities. You got technically three of them. Two that you can use a little more regularly. One that you, the more often you do damage to enemies, it raises this bar, and then you get that special ability to that is unlocked. But you get a few different versions of everything that you can find throughout the area. You can occasionally find stuff that levels up your abilities and stuff every now and then to make them a little stronger. They don't change it too much. Like, I think one of my upgrades when I went from level 1 to level 2 was, like, it did, like, 20 extra damage, and then that was it. So it's not like it's a crazy thing where it goes like, oh, this does 3 attacks at 40 damage each to here's 20 attacks at 500 damage each. Nah, sadly not. So you're going around killing all these things, picking up upgrades where you can, and until you get to a boss. And there's only 2 bosses right now in the game, just as there's only 2 biomes in the game right now, because this is still very early access stuff. And the first big boss is this giant ape thing that can shoot at you, and it slams the ground, sending shockwaves around. And you have to dodge around these things to keep your combo counter real high and stuff, because this has a Devil May Cry / Bayonetta style combat where, you know, you keep attacking with different abilities and stuff, and it raises your stat from like, oh, this is D rank to S rank. So that's real fun to work on. I'm not particularly good at it, but, you know, hey, I suck at games. It is what it is. And you basically have these 2 biomes that you go through, and through them you also find a couple other characters that a cutscene happens, and basically they and your character fight, and they get absorbed into you, basically, and you're able to change into these other characters. So first you start off as this fairly quick, you know, samurai type that's like, oh, quick draw techniques and shit. The second character you find is this big axe-wielding behemoth that, like, slams things into the air, and then you can jump up and just slam them right back into the ground, making them hurt something fierce, but he's a little slower. And then the third one's a ninja. Straight up, it's a fucking ninja. These, I think all of my runs took between about 30 minutes and around 50 minutes-ish, each one of my runs that I succeeded at actually beating the game, because it is made to be played multiple times. You get various currencies as you do this. There's gold, which you use actually in the run. After you die, it's gone. And then there's 2 other currencies that stay with you, and are used after the run. One of them allows you to buy different starting abilities, which are just the various abilities that you can find throughout the game. You can just start with them now if you buy that, which is something I did with basically all of my characters, because I liked the alternate attacks for a lot of the abilities instead. So, like, with the katana guy, he has a special ability where he just starts slashing, like, 5 attacks on an enemy, and it can jump to other enemies if they're in close range. Or he has one that instead just teleports him behind an enemy, and he stabs him real quick. Between the 2 of those... Huh?
I said cute.
Yeah, between the 2 of them, I much prefer the appearing behind somebody and stabbing a bitch. Much more useful for me personally, just because I like using that on like the flying enemies, because locking onto them and trying to jump and dash to them and then meleeing them is just a pain in the ass. So I'm like, I'll just teleport behind you and stab you and kill you instantly and be fucking done with it. So I bought the ability to just start the game with that backstab ability instead, because I just prefer that in my combat arsenal. So everyone has basically, they have, I think it's the white, the right bumper and left bumper, I think, is the super special ability that you kill things and it adds energy to. But basically there's 2 of all of those currently, and there will be more later on as they add more stuff to it. There's going to be 3 or more for each one of these slots. So I just figured out what I wanted in each slot, and I bought the abilities, and I was like, fuck it, I'm good. And then the last currency is some sort of green diamond thing. I don't know what it's called, because I can't ever see when I even get these things because I'm paying attention to other stuff, like namely trying not to die. And it basically allows you more of an upgrade. I wouldn't necessarily call it a tree, but it's like a tier list. It's like, oh, you need to spend by this many abilities to unlock this next tier of them. And you can buy whatever in that you want, but you have to buy like three of them to unlock the next tier, and that tier you have to buy like five of, and the next one you have to buy three of, or so on and so forth. And so those are anywhere from like, oh, you can start with more health and you can buy the same upgrade 10 times, so you end up with 100% extra health, so you go from 100 health to 200. Yay! Super useful. Doesn't sound it, but by God, it's super fucking useful. Or, oh hey, now you're doing like 50% extra damage once you bought all these upgrades or whatever. Like, it's that kind of tree, but there's a ton of different things on it, and they're all very useful, and I've kind of sort of maxed all of them out now.
So you said runs could be anywhere from like 20 to 45-ish minutes or so, yeah?
Yeah, 30 to 45, somewhere in there, yeah.
I'm guessing...
For a completed run.
I'm guessing that you enjoyed yourself considering how much time you put into this based on your Steam info.
I may have maybe slightly spent like two entire days playing basically nothing but this game.
Yeah, there's...
I've actually done like three or four full playthroughs. A lot of that was me just dying partway through my playthroughs, but man, because you still keep all the other stuff, like all the other currencies that you find throughout it, you still keep those, so I've died a bunch and just slowly built up the currency. I really like this game.
Nice. Well, let's talk about the game. It is in early access right now. They said they have a year one roadmap, but they're keeping the timeline flexible to integrate community feedback along the way. The final version, whenever it hits, is slated to have a new playable character, more environments and bosses, and they said that the price will likely increase as content increases in the game. It's starting off at $17.99. If you pick it up before the 21st, you could actually get it for $13.49. But at $18, what is your verdict on this one?
Oh, this is totally worth it. It flows real good. Combat's nice and fast. It is really fun to play. It doesn't have any real story to it right now, but it is super, super fun to play. So I highly suggest it. $18. This is going to be a good one when it's fully finished. So I would definitely get in now.
Very good. All right, next up we got Sigma Star Saga DX, developed by Mighty Rabbit Studios and WayForward, published by WayForward, released April 7th on Switch, PS5, and PC for $19.99. That's right, this one is not on Xbox, and it hurts my soul. It was like Tomba levels of sadness for me. I really wanted this one. The classic shooter RPG is back and better than ever, featuring a unique mix of side-scrolling shoot-em-up space battles and top-down planetary exploration. Sigma Star Saga DX is an explosive genre mashup that lets you take control of allied Earth Federation pilot Ian Wrecker and infiltrate the alien Krill Empire as a double agent in a last-ditch effort to save mankind. Chris, what is going on in Sigma Star Saga DX?
Okay, yay! Well, Sigma Star Saga DX is, of course, a remake of a game that was released on the Game Boy Advance 20 years ago now, actually, I think.
A yay, because Latino Heat just came in with a 37-month resub. Thank you for coming in, Latino. He always good to see you here, and thank you for the sub. Enjoy the emotes, which you already are clearly.
Yeah.
Anyway, Sigma.
Yeah. So this game, like I said, originally came out on Game Boy Advance. It was put out by WayForward when they were kind of just, I think, taking off with the whole Shantae thing. And in fact, if you look at And in fact, if you look at this game, you'll see a lot of resemblances, you know, like in the character designs, and not the music so much because it's different composer, but definitely
this one was still
the
Jake, wasn't it?
No, I actually had that info. It was Martin Scholler. Whomst I'm not as familiar with, actually. That's on me. But a Danish composer. Let's see. Mostly worked on arrangements from what I'm looking at, but he worked on a lot of them. Holy crap. Yeah, I'll have to go through his stuff later. I apologize to Mr. Martin Scholler for not knowing your catalog offhand. but yeah. So the I was just going to say one of the biggest things that you'll probably notice as a similarity between this and Shantae is idle animation boob bouncing.
I approve already.
This one's got that. But yeah, it's a really interesting story. The Krill are an invading alien force that blew a big hole in the ocean, turned it into seafood gumbo, according to our hero's narration in the beginning of the game. He's got a pretty weird sense of humor. He definitely quips all throughout this thing. And basically, the humans decide that what they want to do is infiltrate the Krill, and they want our hero to do it, to become kind of a man on the inside, because they found out that the Krill like to experiment on humans and like enlist them if they like them, and they think that they'll like be like loyal to them. And so they make up this fake identity for him as like a wanted criminal, and then they send him over, and they they take him in, and the whole arrangement seems like our boy's getting, you know, kind of abused from both sides, because the human army like immediately knocks him out and like puts a chip in his head and like sends him over there and just kind of doesn't care. And, you know, the aliens don't treat him well either, but they do stick a biotech kind of suit on him. It's a parasite that I guess acts like body armor and also like other things. It's very sci-fi, but that's why he looks like he's kind of a bug. It's because he is wearing a bug, like a cape and helmet. And his adventure with the Krill involves, kind of begrudgingly, but eventually befriending a boob-tastic alien lady named Simi, and and meeting an Earth girl called Scarlet. So they're kind of the trio of the game. Although you only really play as Ian, as far as I understand. But depending on decisions you make, you can actually end up with a whole bunch of different endings. There's multiple endings in the game, including a special one for New Game Plus. So there's, you know, replay value there. But yeah, the way that the game works is that you walk around and it is a kind of RPG, talking to people and, you know, kind of, like I said, making those decisions. And basically kind of alternate, you might go out and do a shmup mission, and the shmup missions are basically, it just switches to a side-scrolling shooter where in your ship you have to take down a certain amount of enemies, or maybe do something else. Like the beginning of the story plays out in a shmup style. And, like I said, if you once you succeed, then you go back to the top-down thing. And so you also do dungeons and such as a top-down character in a kind of action RPG sort of way. Like, you have a gun and, you know, you fight enemies. But on top of that, you may randomly... You may get teleported back up into your ship, or maybe even a different ship, and you got to do another shmup section before you can continue. Now, both the action RPG sections and the shmup sections can net you experience points, which let you gain levels, which not only make you stronger, but also allow you to customize your weapons. And you have like a lot of different combinations that you can do for like your ship and such. So you can kind of shape your ship into ship shape. And into the form that you want. And like I said, there's a lot of customization in the game. Like I said, you can kind of determine how the story is going to play out. You can also determine how your ship's going to work. Like the real thing about it, though, is that, like, you know, it's the shmup sections. It's like it is a hybrid of a shmup and an RPG, and neither of them are like kind of top of their game, you know. So like, you know, real hardcore shmup guys probably aren't going to be very impressed with the shmup sections, and real hardcore RPG people are probably not going to be that impressed with the RPG parts. And, you know, if you do lean one way or the other, you might get disappointed because the shmup sections are usually very short because, like I said, they're dependent on how many enemies you have to destroy or, you know, whatever other goal. And the RPG part is frequently interrupted by the shmup sections. So, you know, you're kind of like, it is a unique kind of game in that really nobody has ever done it like this. And I don't think they have since. So, you know, it really is an interesting
shit out of us, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the U word actually does apply to this game. I'm sorry to say. Mm-hmm. There's hardly any other way to put it.
Uh-huh.
So that's the basic game. That's the basic game, and then from that you get some nice extras with your deluxe or DX version. For one thing, the DX version does change certain things about the gameplay to make it a little bit more accessible. I couldn't get a sense of what all of them were because I haven't played all the way through this game, but I can already tell you that. So basically, you do start off a little tankier, so you don't die as easily, which is nice. The other thing is that, crap, I'm trying to remember now. I had notes, but I lost them. But yeah, like, there are different, like, basically, kind of quality of life things to, like, make things easier. I guess I don't have a list of really what that is, but I did notice it's not just throwing the game into an emulator. There actually are some different things. And also some bug fixes, but I don't have the details on that one either. But they say that on Wikipedia anyway.
I know. I'm looking at the store page. It mentions it has an improved map, decreased random encounter rate, which is nice.
Yes.
Rebalanced XP, more save points, quality of life updates. So it sounds like they went in and really.
Oh, yeah. That's all the stuff. I think that's all the stuff I had written down. So, yeah. So yeah, they have all that. Also, they have a dot matrix filter if you want, which is kind of cool. I appreciate when they do that and not the CRT filter for Game Boy Advance games because it's, you know, very... They also give you the different screen sizes, so you can do like the pixel perfect, which, or full rather, is what they call it, and you can choose like a whole bunch of different borders to put up, including some newly drawn, looks like, kind of pinup images of Scarlet and Saimi, which is kind of cool. Or, you know, just like a space border if you prefer. But they also give you a 3-2 kind of stretched mode, so they keep the aspect ratio and just stretch it out. And then they have a stretch mode, which stretches it out to these switches widescreen, which is bad. Don't do it. Very, very bad. How dare you? They, on top of the game having a save system where, you know, you do have generous save points thanks to the remake, they also give you a single save state that you can do, so you can, or one slot, you know, per game, so you can save and load at will. You get an art gallery and a jukebox. The jukebox is already all unlocked. You don't have to unlock it in the game or anything. Same thing with the art gallery. They also have this interesting, like, vocal theme cover. I guess somebody wrote lyrics to one of the songs of the game, and that plays persistently through the title screen, and if you roll the credits, it actually plays through the entire song and then just starts it over.
Oh, jeez.
Which I think is funny. I mean, it's fine. I was just like going through the credits to like see who all worked on it to see if there's anybody I know, because, you know, we know some of these folks, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it's a good DX version. Like I said, it looks great, feels great. There are those quality of life improvements, and it was a cool game to begin with on the Game Boy Advance, frequently overlooked, although people that know me as a shmup fan and an RPG fan have been recommending this one to me for years, but I own it, so it's like I've had it for this whole time.
Well, this re-release clocks in at $20. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think $20 is worth it. You get a lot of replay value out of this game. There's a lot to it. It's well written, plays nicely.
It's pretty brand new, wasn't it? So it's cheaper than brand new.
I think so. I don't really remember how much it was brand new.
Game Boy games were 30. Like first party were 35 and Square were 40.
Yeah. It's
Square tax.
Yeah, for sure. I think that, yeah, the it's, if you want to buy the cartridge, I'm looking around right now, it looks like it's more expensive than 20, that's for sure. But yeah, I'd say it's a buy it.
Very good. All right, next up, Tears Revolude, developed by Worldwide Software, published by Kemco, released April 10th as an Xbox Play Anywhere title, Switch 1 and 2, PS4, PS5 for $19.99. A century after the legendary artist Orwell vanished, Sion and Michelle begin a journey to uncover his final works. Along the way, they encounter Liara, a mysterious girl who has lost her memories. What she carries holds the power to alter their path and entwine their fates, drawing the party into a story of art, destiny, and hidden truths in a classic fantasy world. Chris, what is going on in this newest title from Kemco?
Well, newest re-release from Kemco. This is a re-release of a 2014 mobile game, which actually last time when I talked about Fortuna Magus, that was a Worldwide Software game as well. So I guess they're starting to lean on that a little bit. In fact, I may have even mentioned Tears Revolute in my list of talking about what Worldwide Software did. But anyway, yeah, so this is a, this is that, this is an interesting one. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it in the Kemco like list of RPGs, which is giant. just a giant thing of RPGs. But yeah, the story does check out. You got Sion, I don't know, and Michelle, a pair of age-inappropriate adventurers. That is to say, Michelle's kind of close to middle age, and Sion is clearly like a young whippersnapper. Michelle gives her age as 29 years and 74 months old. So that's
what?
Yeah, that's the joke.
I like this character.
Yeah, she's pretty cool. She's sassy, so that's kind of nice. And then they meet Liara, who is a girl who has lost, like, not only memories of her identity, but she can't remember what things like spaghetti are. So, you know, there's a mystery there as to why she's missing most of her whole thing. The way the game plays out, like I said, is very... gosh, I hate to use the U word in sincerity, but... But damn, I never
like, use the word distinct, bastard.
Distinct.
I hate you too. You're so, making it so much worse.
That's our job.
So it acts like basically a dungeon crawler, like your average like first person dungeon crawler. So like when you go to a town, it's like it'll have just menu options like go to blacksmith, go to shop or talk. And then you can talk to man or woman or boy or girl.
Worried woman.
Yeah, there's Upset Woman, actually, and Troubled Man, and Occupied Man. And sometimes if they have like a modifier to their gender, it's because they have a little side quest for you to do. So a Troubled Man is troubled because somebody needs to do a side quest for this man real quick, and you fit the bill. So yeah, then, you know, like I said, that's all fine. Then you get into the dungeons, and the dungeons are, so your character moves along.
Can I just
along.
Say this game's weird as hell with the dungeons?
Yes, that's what we were going to talk about. So the game, you actually walk your character around the dungeon, right? And the dungeons always start at this like isometric angle, but you can actually change the angle to whatever you want. You have to press R to put it into turn mode, and then you turn it to like different like kind of static viewpoints, and there's three maps in your view at all times. In the big middle, there's the playing field where you can see yourself. Your character is down there looking like a little chibi, and you can see like the walls and like the enemies on the map, which are always represented by this like black void with like two little dots in it. I don't know, it's kind of weird. And then in the upper left corner, there's the typical RPG map, right, which just shows you a more laser blue like small version of where you of your map, so you can like see where the entrances and exits and corners are and like different little obstacles. And then there's a thing called the player view, which you can toggle on and off, but you can't make it your main view. But what it is it's a first person view of whatever you're looking at. So, you know, if you're it's so weird. It's just like, yeah, it's a little first-person view of the dungeon as you're actively walking through it. It's so small that you can't really do anything with it, so I don't really understand why it's there. And
it
like
was
I said, you
used in a quest one time.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. And then later on in some of the later dungeons, there are things where you have to look close on like a statue or something to help figure out like a daytime or a nighttime. It gets complex. It's kind of irritating with some of the later dungeons, but yeah, I played through this entire goddamn game and didn't realize you could turn that off.
Oh, that's funny. It's because it's obtuse. You have to put it into turn mode, and then it says player view, and you have to push the A button while in turn mode to toggle it on or off, but it doesn't really tell you whether it's being toggled on or off. It's just, it says player mode or it says nothing, and if it says nothing, then you've successfully turned it off.
Son of a bitch. Because it felt like that drastically affected performance of the game. I don't know how it ran on the Switch, but on Xbox it was very sluggish and jerky. Like, not to the point where it was unplayable, just that it felt like it was running at like 20 frames per second.
I'm playing it on Switch too.
Consistent 20.
Yeah, I'm playing it on Switch too, and it looks fine, so I don't know, maybe that is an issue on the conversion there. It
felt very jerky.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, you go into battles. Battles are in first person. Enemy designs are a little weird because like everything's anime style in this game, except that they like kind of use like realistic like Dungeons and Dragon art for the enemies instead of like the more stylized stuff you're kind of used to seeing. So that's interesting. It's maybe they license some assets or something, or you know, maybe there is like an actual different artist. But speaking of art, the characters are you know, anime characters as one usually is, and indeed you'll kind of see like the similarities between this and Fortuna Magus if you happen to have played that. And you know, Worldwide Software does have like this specific kind of style that's like a kind of really I'm going to call it like low res anime. That is to say, not a whole lot of detail and not a lot of shininess, You know how anime characters are really, really ultra shiny?
Yeah.
Yeah, these characters are very flat, to the point where some of the NPCs actually look like what another anime would animate as a dead person. That is to say, like, because their eyes have no light in them, but, you know, their eyes are open, so they just kind of look like they have are recently deceased. It won't make sense unless you actually play the game and see what I'm looking at, but it was a little off-putting. And they did a better job of, if they did clean that up for both games, they did a better job in Fortuna Magus of like making the characters look a little livelier. But yeah, there's a very matte look to the characters. They're not glossy like an anime character is, to use, you know, some photography terms here. Having said, I like the way the game is written. I enjoy the story. It's got like a little bit of, you know, mystery to it with the girl, of course. And I like the the way Michelle and Sion kind of, you know, goad each other and stuff. It's pretty cute. So there's good stuff in this game. I also really like that it kind of borrows a little bit of the Suikoden system of improving your weapons instead of purchasing new ones. However, this one has another little twist in that you can change your weapon's type, and you can do it for free. So you can change your longsword, which is like your average stat sword, into a claymore if you like want more attack power but less magic power, or you can turn it into another kind that has like more magic power, or another kind that increases your HP and MP but drops your attack a little bit. And you can just freely switch any of the weapons to different types, which makes no real world sense, of course. That definitely is an ungrounded thing to do, but I enjoy it in the gameplay like aspect. So yeah, there's some stuff to love here, but yeah, it's a weird looking game, and certainly, yeah, there's some stuff about it that's a little bit off-putting, I would say. And yeah, apart from that, it definitely looks like a mobile game. All of the buttons in the, or, you know, all the menu options and stuff are these big bubbly, not bubbly, but they definitely look like big touchable buttons.
Yeah.
And you know, of course, even on Switch, it does not have touchscreen capability. They just were like, nah, we'll just make it look like it has it because it originally did, but only for mobile. But yeah.
Which is weird because the Xbox PC version, because it's a Play Anywhere title, I played a bit of it on my PC as well, that you could click around with the mouse.
Oh, interesting. Well, yeah, but you cannot touch the screen in this game, and that's
interesting.
That's par for the course. I don't think there is a Kemco game that has touchscreen capabilities on Switch, so I'm not singling this game out. I'm just saying the more it looks like you can touch it, the more frustrating it is that you cannot.
Yeah, I wonder if there's a technical reason behind Kemco not doing touchscreen in their games.
Yeah.
Like, if they have PC controls, why can't... I don't know. I don't know programming, so I don't know that stuff. But this one, as per usual, clocks in at $20 dues. What do you think of it?
Dollary dues. That needs to dollary die as a phrase.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. I'm not actually offended. It's just I hear that a lot nowadays.
Dollary ding-dongs? Yeah. Is that better?
Yes, 1,000 times better. Okay. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Yeah, I'm going to give this one, I'm going to put this one in the try it category, only because before you consider purchasing this one, do check out the presentation of it and see if that's something you vibe with, because it is distinct amongst other Kemco RPGs in the way that it looks, and you know that does naturally extend to the way that it plays and the kind of experience that you can expect to have with it. So yeah, we're gonna say try it on this one, although I will say it is also quality, so you know, you can if you do buy it, I think you'll be fine with it.
Very good. Next up, we got a Purnell here. Purnell, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Tired as it goes, but you know,
how was board game night?
Went well. It wasn't a massive turnout, but it was more than the last few weeks, which gives me the impression that weather improving is getting more people out of the house. So here's the hoping these trends continue.
Very much so. How was your weekend? Do anything fun?
So I never remember anymore. I know for a fact that I visited my aunt, because of course I did. Saturday. I hate this. I cannot remember what I did already. I forgot that freaking fast. Oh, I took my nephew car shopping. That was fun. So he's about to get his first car, so I don't have any kids. We'll likely never manage to have kids, but as a result of having a nephew who loves me, I was able to kind of at least vicariously have that experience, because I was able to do the whole good advice bit, you know, walk him to the lot, talking to him about cars and how to tell him, like, how to go about getting, like, good credit checks done on, you know, good credit checks done outside of the dealership, you know, getting a car inspection done, getting the Carfax done on that, as well as an actual inspection, all kinds of junk. It was fun. And then on Saturday, the black hole of death, I cannot remember what the hell I did. Oh, I went to New York. There we go. I went to New York City, and I was able to check a bucket list item off. I was able to go to Broadway. So I got to see two Broadway musicals in one day. And then on the way home, I almost got caught in a stampede of people at freaking Penn Terminal in New York City, because they were just overwhelmed with people trying to get into a single door. That was fun. I can't complain. It was a very good weekend. I liked it. So
very good.
I also hope those trends continue too, because it's funny. Once I got a better job, all of a sudden all the issues I had about, man, not dating is hard, and all these things were a problem. Now I kind of don't care as much anymore. Now I just have experiences. So I've been grateful for that.
It's good to have experiences. I feel like I don't have enough in my life anymore. But
ways to get around that. I mean, you have the stuff you do to, like, with the soda and all, but you got to branch it out to, like, okay, well, there's got to be some events that happen out that way. But, like, for example, I keep hearing Jim Thorpe down here quite frequently. Like, oh, this thing's going on in Jim Thorpe. And what the hell happens in Jim Thorpe? Apparently stuff does, because people are going for events. I mean, you just got to look around for stuff that's popping off in your areas or within driving distance and make a thing out of it. And then work within what you got just to get out.
Yeah, that's the problem, is everything is, like, just far enough away that you're like, do I really want to for this?
The answer ends up being still, yeah, because it's different.
Well, a lot of times it comes down to Ashley going, no.
Oh, that's different thing. Yeah, that's so. It was like, well.
Hun, do you want to see a concert next weekend? No. Why the fuck would I want to see a concert?
Then what would she want to do? Like, that could be a thing. Like, watch, is there Netflix. Anything you want to do that's not local? We said she wants to what?
Watch Netflix.
And that, watch Netflix out of state.
I keep trying to convince her to go to MAGFest with me and just stay in the hotel room and watch Netflix the whole time.
Hell, get an Airbnb and watch Netflix there, and then you can go out and, like, kind of catch some air and do whatever in the area and be somewhere different. Sometimes it's just about being somewhere different, even if it's just to watch Netflix.
True.
That's how I see it. Like, I thought about, I want to go all these different cities and try to travel more, but then the thing comes down to it. Once you get used to the aspect of every city being a different place that has restaurants to eat and places to sleep, and bars who drink it, you find yourself thinking, so what's the point of going to all these different places? And the answer is to eat somewhere else and to sleep somewhere else and just to stare at different buildings in a different place. But that's enough.
That also costs money.
That is true. But that's why you don't have to go so far. That's why I meant about the whole travel, like getting a car and drive somewhere for the day.
Drive to my mom's.
But it's cheaper than a plane. cheaper than a plane ticket. Do that then, yeah. Go visit your mom. Play some mahjong with your mom or something.
Oh, she'll just sit outside, play bingo on her phone, and smoke cigarettes.
Take her phone and then play bingo with cardboard.
I want to take her to bingo night again. It's been too long. Last time we went to bingo night, I won $100 Walmart gift card. So what?
There you go. Like, why would you want to play bingo on your phone when you can go to a place and win shit? Actually play the game.
Because it's free on your phone.
Yeah, but it's also boring. Oh, because bingo as a game, if there's no prize involved, is like the most boring thing. Someone calls a number. Oh, I can put my thingy on there. oh, I filled the board, bingo, and then what? Do it again. Like, there's no agent. The thing is, like, older people don't care, but like, there's no agency to bingo. You just listen for a number to get called, and you put your little thingy on it.
You like, would be aunt, surprised. I played. There is a game on Xbox for King's Casino, something like that. They had a bingo game, and I got addicted to just sitting there playing digital bingo.
And it didn't have like a tertiary prize, like if you won X number of games, you earned a cinema scene or cosmetics or anything.
It's a casino, so you would pay to chips to enter, and if you won, you would get an amount of chips in the game. It's not real money.
And what
money,
the chips in game do? I know, but what
the chips in the game you use do? It to gamble in other games.
But in the end, you keep gambling. Yeah. Like, for example, like I never got into like Casino Kid and all that stuff, but always RPGs with casinos worked for me. And the reason being is because they are casinos and it's not real money or whatever, but if I do well enough, I do get exclusive equipment for the game that I can only get at the casino. So it's like, true. I'm still using the earnings at the casino to ultimately do something. But for me, if I'm winning all this money and the games themselves, that's the important part, by the way, the games themselves also don't have any sort of like agency to them. Like, I don't feel like I'm actually outsmarting anybody or playing strategically or whatever. Then I need a prize or something to use the earnings on to motivate me to bother doing it. Otherwise, I'm like, I might as well play a different game. Like, I remember playing Persona 1 and getting hooked on blackjack and poker for hours.
Well, you need chips to play more games in the casino, so you just win chips to keep playing other games. They had a bunch of different games in there. They had slots, they had poker, they had blackjack, roulette. What are some of the other?
But then what happens if you go bankrupt?
Then you either got to buy more chips or you're done playing.
Oh, with real money?
Yep. Or if you wait long enough, you can earn stuff in game. It's just a slow process. It's a casino game. They want money.
Oh yeah, they do.
Yeah, but there's no cash out for real money. So
yeah, that's anyway, the real secret. Like, hey,
speaking of cashing out, we got two games left to cash out, and we're done with this episode. Should we dive into these?
Indubitably. Also, before that, just real quick, without saying what, how many tries, how many buys, and how many denies this episode?
We had a buy, two buys.
I can say what I had. Okay, there you go.
Two buys and a try. I'm going to assume one of those buys was Chris.
Yes.
One of them, yeah.
Considering he had two games and Aki had one, mathematically, Chris had to have one of the buy-ins.
I don't know. I think I was just really good at playing the odds. Give me my chip.
You should play casino games.
It's like one of those. It's like one of those bets where the odds are like, you know, 1.1. So like, if you bet $1, you win $1.10.
Hell yeah, man!
You can't lose.
A win's a win.
How does the house win anything? How does the house win anything here?
Fuck it. Victory's a victory.
Can't lose. Give me that money.
Anyway, let's dive into these. Next up is Skull Horde, developed and published by 8-Bit Skull. Released April 10th on Steam for $12.99. Skull Horde is an auto-battler dungeon crawler where you play as a flying skull necromancer. Find powerful loot and create overpowered builds. Summon a horde of skeletons in battle of bone versus flesh. Pernell, what is Skull Horde?
So, as you mentioned, it is a dungeon crawler of sorts where you are sort of controlling an army as they maneuver through these corridors of these dungeons, ultimately getting to the bottom to fight the big bad boss and move on to the next level, unless you decide to go back to do harder difficulties. But let's just talk about the actual mechanics and then maybe elaborate more on the stuff I just said. So, at the offset, you play as a skull. There are different skulls that you can unlock based on after fulfilling certain conditions, but for the most part, the default skull has the ability to do the following. Fly around and shoot very weak bullets. That's all your skull can do. And if that was all that was at your total disposal, that would be very unfortunate because you wouldn't get very far. But fortunately, this skull has the ability to manipulate monsters, bony monsters, to do his bidding. So the way the game does this is that we have a total of 6 different slots. And each of these slots can have one type of unit sitting in it. And the units have various classifications like Vanguard, Melee, Range, stuff like that. And when you get one, they go in that slot. Typically, this is done by way of a shop where the game lets you choose to buy from a roster of 3 different units using your in-game money. Once you buy a unit that doesn't exist in your roster yet, if you have an empty slot, it'll fill it. If you do not have any empty slots and you don't have a thing to buy that populates one of the already existing slots, you can't buy anything. Each of these units comes in a variety of ranks like veteran, champion, or elite, sorry, common, elite, or professional. And when you buy one, it goes in the slot. And as you walk around the dungeon, it will do its dungeony thing to fight monsters as it does as it walks around with your skull buddy. If it sees enemies on the screen, they will run after them and start beating their asses. Now, let's say, for example, I buy 2 more of the same type of unit, and they both populate the same slot as the first one. At this point, they will fuse and become a stronger version of that first unit type. And this happens again, until the point where they become a champion type unit. Because these advancements are called whatever the first one's called, I have no idea. Then veteran, then champion. And after you get a champion type unit, they become really powerful, and then you can start building another unit in the same manner as the way you did the first one, should you decide to keep using that type of unit in that slot. When enemies appear on the screen and they start to attack them, if you don't push any buttons, they will just kind of run up on them and start beating them up willy-nilly. But you are able to press a button that says, come to me, and they will run back to you in the event that you do not want them fighting things. And unless I'm missing something, that is all you can do in regards to genuinely controlling your units. However, every skull has a special ability that's associated with it, and the default skull special ability is Frenzy. While the ability is charged up, you can press the button, and all of your minions will go into like a sort of a aggressive attack mode and do more damage on enemies. You are able to spend money on new units, like I mentioned before. There's also situations where you might come across a shop that lets you use the blood, which you get from defeating monsters, to purchase special relics that will increase parameters on your character, like the dodge chance or your crit chance, the attack damage of your little spitball bullets from the skull, etc., etc. I don't know if there's a place to see where these all accumulate. If there is, I haven't seen it, or I didn't find it, but every time you get a new one, the game does at least tell you this is what it's going to augment, and this is what your new stat will be if you decide to take it. You are able to get rerolls sometimes for free, sometimes by spending a little bit of money, depending on if you've unlocked the ability to have some free rerolls or whatever. But you'll spend a lot of time killing enemies, opening treasure chests, shopping, and getting these new loot items, with the intent being to modify those stats. It is a good time. Eventually, the game starts to get pretty wild and crazy, too, because especially if you get your luck stat to start bumping up, you'll be getting enemies to drop like 5 types of loot items in one mass of enemy bullets. It feels pretty good, too. I've done it more than a few times. As you're running through each dungeon looking for the exit on that floor, in the upper right corner, there's an hourglass that is ticking down. And every time the hourglass empties, it tips over to start ticking down again. And at each flip, the aggression and difficulty level of the dungeon will increase. So the longer you spend wandering around and not accomplishing anything, the more difficult the game's going to be. And this especially culminates when you find yourself fighting either an elite enemy or the final boss of the level, because they are absolute damage sponges and will piss you off. In the event that you manage to run out of... In the event that an enemy, one of your unit types, gets killed from taking too much damage, it will go into a queue for resurrection. And after a certain amount of time passes, depending on the unit that gets KO'd, it will get resurrected and be back in the fight. Now, if you get 5 units KO'd, for example, the clock of the least recently killed enemy or unit type will be ticking down. So it might be 4 seconds for that guy, and then when that ticks down, the 6 seconds on the next guy will begin to start. So if you get a lot of your guys KO'd in rapid succession, you might find yourself in a unit drought for a period of time waiting for these guys to come back. And the enemies don't really care. They're just going to come after you any freaking way. So be mindful of that. In the event you lose all of your units, you will lose a life. And after 3 lives, game over. Now, there are situations, however, where you might be able to do a difficulty mode where when you go into the level, you get to choose some negative elements to your adventure, one of which being something like having only 1 life in the run. So be mindful of that. But for every negative you choose, you get to choose 1 positive thing called a right. And you might be able to do something with that to do, you know, have a more interesting run and get better rewards when you're done. So you might find yourself taking on 3 negative things because you feel as though they're manageable, and then the 3 benefits will be fantastic. There are also events that occur in the dungeons, like any game of this type, like, you know, King of the Hill, where you might have to stand in a circle and fend off enemies until a flag reaches the post of the top. Sometimes you might come across a thing where if you take on this negative effect for X amount of time, you'll get this super benefit, like free units that you can purchase or what have you. And every time you're done a run, you are able to spend currency on a skill tree for the respective skull that you are playing as. Because each unlockable skull has their own skill tree that you can upgrade to make future runs with them a little bit better and more effective. And of course, there's fantastic mellow music to play along with your runs as bone bashes flesh into the walls, painting it with the color of glory. As you succeed down the rabbit hole to eventually avenge your body by defeating said captured body and taking it back, thereby being the true ruler of the bone, because bone beats flesh any day of the week, according to this game, anyway. All in all, I think this game is a lot of fun. I do wish there was a bit more control over the units, but I think that's also kind of the intention of the game. Manage chaos as your units are just beating crap up as long as you chose the right ones at the right time with the right builds. But that's all I might need in this game, too. So if you find yourself being the type that's interested in what I just described, you might want to give this game a try, too.
Very good. Well, it clocks in at 13. Your official verdict?
I think this game is a good buy. Recommended. Just know going in, like I said, that the units are doing all the real fighting. You are just trying to helpfully guide them along to not get killed.
All right, very good. And finally tonight, we have a preview-ish thing-like. Slash Zero, developed by Streetlamp Studio, published by Skystone Games. It's releasing sometime in the future when it's ready on Steam. Slash Zero is a 3D roguelike action platformer. As a time hacker, your job is to travel across timelines and explore cyberpunk world, use combat skills and strategies to piece together the truth, and take down the Lord of the Void. Is what you see the truth? Pernell, we didn't get to really see this one, did we?
No, because unfortunately, my intention was to play the game last weekend, and it come to find out when I go to boot the thing up that the preview test ended on the 9th, so before the weekend even started. So unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to do anything with this per se, but obviously, I was interested enough in the game to even want to attempt the preview.
I just want to point out that our email for the game had no mention of a time-limited thing, so we legitimately had no clue at the time that it was a time limited event, and we apologize to Streetlamp and Skystone that we missed out on the time limited test, but hopefully in the future we could give it another go, because this one looks really cool. What all did you see about this one?
Well, the vibe I got from it immediately gave me thoughts of like the game that I did earlier this year, BlazBlue Entropy Effect, in that you are an anime inspired character who is doing some left to right side scrolling, random generated dungeon, you know, crazy, you know, momentum based melee in range combat against aggressive foes. As you're going through level to level, enemies will spawn onto the map. And the character I mainly looked into, there's two characters I know, one that was gun focused, a la like Noel Vermillion, and another who's melee focused, but not quite soul bad guy, because this guy is less slow and lumbering and more quick and agile. Two types of characters that you're using that you can choose from. As enemies are coming out, you're able to unleash a variety of combo moves on them with very flashy visual effects. There's also super moves, or at least strong moves that can be triggered that will kind of bring up a very brief anime cutscene as the guy's unleashing his special move and nicely stating like, "Oh, grab your gun, you know, that kind of thing." As you defeat enemies, you'll gain access to treasure chests and benefit buffs that will allow you to kind of modify or augment your character to give them buffs or attack strength additions or even attack modifiers. So that, for example, an attack might now have lightning properties and, you know, spark a guy, or freezing properties that will slow a guy down or ice it down for a few seconds. Every time you manage to beat one of these sections, the game will do a nice little flashy transition as you go from one screen to the next, or more combat will ensue, ultimately leading to you fighting a final boss for the level, and if you manage to beat him, ta-da, you're good. Graphically, the game looks very beautiful to me. The backgrounds, there's a lot of like various parallel scrolling background action taking place as you move throughout the levels. Like a train might be going around in the background in one direction while like there's other stuff going on in the opposite direction also in the background. And a couple still elements back there as well. So basically very active backgrounds as you play the game. Musically, it's pretty chill, I believe it or not. It's not very, you know, rocking. Not in a bad way when I say that, but it felt more chill than rocking in that sense. And personalities seem to be all over the place. It's something that I look forward to giving a try, you know, when there's a play test that's not a minimal amount of time. And I can actually sit with it when I have the opportunity to do so. Because this is definitely in my wheelhouse at the moment, though. It definitely looks like a lot like, okay, well, if you like BlazBlue Entropy Effect, you will likely enjoy this too if you're looking for more gameplay of that ilk.
And I had a great time with Entropy Effect, so if this is anything like that, I'm very excited to see more about it. The videos and trailers and previews I've seen of it, it's fluid, it's fast paced. It looks like a blast, and I hope this... I don't know what platforms this is planned for, if it's just Steam or if they're looking at consoles as well. I really hope this hits everything, because it looks cool as shit.
You and me both. The more people to get to play it, the better, as they say.
All right, well, for now, do you think we should wishlist, follow, or ignore?
I'll easily wishlist this game. It's on my wishlist. Who would I be to tell you not to do it?
Okay, well, I just added it to mine, so there you go.
Burp, burp, burp.
Burp, burp, burp. And with that, we are done with the episode. It was a fairly quick one today. Music this episode, since we talked about Sigma Star Saga, I got the song Star Stealing Girl stuck in my head, and we're going to play that from Final Fantasy Music DJ.
That's unbelievable!
It isn't...
Unbelievable.
Who's what? What's what?
What is Final Fantasy Music DJ?
That's the OC remix name of Harun Paracha.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was from the old Square Dance album.
I do remember that.
Yeah, that's... Was Square Dance at Mag 1, or was that at Mag 2?
I think it was 2.
I know 1UP, the Nobu tribute, and... Time and Space were at Mag 1.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. I know Time and Space was there, but I don't remember anything about Square Dance being there. But I could be wrong and old. But I don't remember it being there.
Yeah, I'm old too. Yay! So is this song.
Here's to, does
anyone have any final words to wrap up this show?
Here's to aging good times. Except for Aki, because she's like 12.
Yeah.
What the fuck was that noise?
That was a happy sound. I'm happy.
Because you're 12?
Yeah, because I'm a child. That makes me happy.
Yay.
I will forever be young, and that's good enough.
Forever young.
Na, na, na. Na, na, na. Na, 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 na.